Hey, Magic fans. Welcome to another episode of the Down the Road podcast. Today we have DJ Wilson, who was the 17th pick of the 2017 NBA draft. In today's episode, we talk about his time in Michigan playing with his former teammate Mo Wagner and watching a young, budding Franz Wagner, along with his decision to stay at home with his family for the draft, why he chose that, getting drafted to the Milwaukee Bucks, playing with Giannis, and being in title contention. Also, Magic fans, we have four home games this upcoming week. On the 11th and 13th, we play the Raptors 905 for Osceola Ranchers Night and Dominican Republic Heritage Night. Then on the 15th and 16th, we have the Long Island Nets for Marvel Superhero Night. The first 1,000 fans in attendance get a Osceola Magic Marvel comic book. And then the following night will be Puerto Rican Heritage Night. You don't want to miss it.
Hey, Magic fans, this is Matt McClung of the Osceola Magic.
This is Brandon Williams. This is DJ Wilson.
This is Admiral Schofield.
This is Trevlin Queen of the Osceola Magic, and you're listening to the Down the Road podcast.
Hello, everybody. I am Conrad Filotti from the Osceola Magic. We're here for the Down the Road podcast. I have my guest today, DJ Wilson. DJ, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm great, man. Can't complain. I appreciate y'all for having me on here.
Well, thank you for taking your time out of your day to go ahead and do this. I know schedule of a player, especially when you have 14 games this month, isn't going to be too easy or open, but we had to go ahead and try and find some time, had to get you on here. I mean, you've been playing crazy lately, and it's been a lot of fun to watch, you know, see this kind of resurgence of you. But we could tackle that in a little bit. But first off, I mean, I just want to talk about Michigan, man. I know we're just going to start your college career with this item. How was it in Michigan? You played a few seasons over there. I know there were some injuries involved, but what can you really say about that program and what they did for you guys?
Nah, they did great by us. I know coming in there, I was about like 6'10", 190, and then within my first redshirt year, after I got hurt in the beginning of the season, I decided to redshirt. I gained 45 pounds, put on like almost 10 inches to my vert. So the work that I put in that weight room with Coach Sanderson, the best strength coach in the country, paid dividends. Myself and Duncan, it was both of our redshirt years. That was my freshman redshirt year, and then him transferring in from a D3 school. We both had to sit out. So to just be able to compete with one another in the weight room, on the court, for that entire year, it paid dividends, and now he's playing great, doing what he's doing. So
yeah, I mean, Michigan turns around a lot of pros. I mean, Michigan's one of those powerhouse colleges. I feel like when they're pitching to you, hey, we want you to sign with us, like how many players we've had go pro, is that kind of how that goes when the whole recruiting process happens, or is that not even part of it for you?
Not so much, because I feel like under Beilein, he didn't really recruit a lot of 4 or 5 star guys that planned on going one and done. He recruited a lot of 2-3 star recruits in which he felt like had the basketball IQ, and he could kind of just mold and help build into, you know, the players that we are today. So I feel like with his program, keeping guys for like those 2 to 3 years, it paid dividends not only for us, but just for his program in general, because we are now playing with each other for multiple years on end and comfortable, and you could just see the success, and this kind of speaks for itself.
I mean, yeah, the Wolverines go ahead and they travel in packs, and the Magic have a bunch of Michigan players throughout their organization, whether it's with Orlando or Osceola. And what's it kind of like when you go from that high school day? Because, I mean, high school, you're still a kid. Even in college, you're still kind of a kid compared to where you're at today. But you go from taking the school bus to games, and then now you're going on, like, a plane.
Yeah.
How much different is that feeling? And when is it kind of like the pinch-me moments when you first go there and you're just immersed in it all for the very first time?
Right. No, it's surreal, definitely, because it's kind of everything that you imagined in terms of just going to a big school. So it's definitely surreal, but two, you put in the work in order to reap those benefits and whatnot. So, you know, like the practices, the classes, the tutors, you know, you definitely put in the work, and you kind of pay for it. So yeah,
that's
a blessing though, regardless.
Amazing. And then we're talking about Michigan, we're talking about all the great parts of it, and then you have a teammate over there that's, you know, currently in Orlando. You have Mo Wagner that plays with you for a bit. What was it like when you first met Mo? I know a lot of people have different impressions of him when they first meet him, especially if you're on the opposing side. Was there any kind of reactions that you had when you first stepped on the floor with him?
Nah, you know, Mo is somebody that you love playing with and you hate playing against. And you know, the mo that we all come to love and that we all come to know is, it was no different from day one from him coming over. I remember he came over with his mom and dad from Germany. Coach Beilein was like, yeah, we got this tall German kid. He's skilled. I think he can help us next year at the five. And I just remember him coming in just loud. You know how Mo is obnoxious, smart comment after smart comment. And even then, his English was not even as good as it is now. So he didn't care. He still didn't care. He's still trying to get his point across, whether it was half German, half English, like, it didn't matter. So Mo's Mo, and that's why I love him, because he hasn't changed, and that's just who he is at his core. So he's just the most generous, authentic guy, and he can rub you the wrong way playing against him just because how competitive and how just outlandish he can be at times. But, you know, that's my dog. Like, I love Mo.
What's the most wild thing where you saw him say something, do something that's, you know, make it in appropriate terms, and you were like, oh, man. Like, like, what was the most outlandish thing that you saw Mo do during any kind of games?
I think we had a big game at Indiana, and this was when Tom Crean was coaching them. And I remember in front of their bench, he hit, like, a fadeaway. And to this day, he says that he didn't see Tom Crean out the corner of his eye. But he turns around to, like, sprint back on defense. And he's not even on the court. He's on the sideline at this point because he shot a fadeaway. He's falling out of bounds. And he doesn't even bother to try to get back on the court. He just sees Tom Crean standing there at half court in front of, like, the scorer's table. And instead of trying to get back into play, he just keeps running out of bounds and, like, shoulder checks Tom Crean.
Oh, my gosh.
And Tom Crean goes flying back, souls to the ceiling, and Mo just keeps running back on defense. And I remember it was just on SportsCenter the next day, but that's the definition of Mo. Like, it don't matter. He's going to run over a coach, a player, if you're on the other team. Yeah, that's the definition of Mo.
And then how was it to kind of reunite with them a little bit in training camp this year with the Orlando Magic when you guys were sitting there during preseason? Was it yeah. What was the reunion like?
No, it was crazy. It was kind of like everything came full circle because we had a lot of talks. Even my last year when I decided to leave and he decided to stay, we both kind of did that process together. We both went to the combine together. We're roommates together. I just happened to stay in the draft and he came back. And they went to the national championship, and it worked out for him. So, yeah, to come back to that, just everything comes full circle. And then even my last year, while the 2 years that we played together at Michigan, Franz would come to campus, and I'd see him like a young Franz. Yeah. And you could just see the promise that he had at being 14, 15.
Wow.
While we're on campus and while we're at practice and whatnot. So to see it all just come full circle is crazy.
So you thought Franz was going to be pretty darn good like he's doing right now, or was it just you saw there was something?
Nah, Mo would always like, yo, Franz. And he would always be watching his games too. So, you know, you couldn't help but sit there and watch with him. And you could just see, like, definitely, because at the time he was just as big as us, but he was playing on the perimeter. He was bringing the ball up, and he's playing how he does now just over there. So, yeah, it was always there. And the talent and everything that he showcased and now was always there.
Yeah, because when he got picked by Orlando at number 8, some people thought it was a bit too high.
Yeah.
And now I know we're so close to that draft, really not that far away from it, but if you did a redraft, he's arguably top 1. I mean, there's right. 4 people you could argue in that area, and right. It's just cool for you to say that you kind of saw some light in him when he was only 14 years old. And to kind of tie things off with Michigan or talk about another part, I know I've seen you talk about this before and other people have, but you went through something that was pretty traumatic over there too with the plane crash. Mm-hmm. Oh, and, you know, until people really dig in, they don't really know about that maybe, yeah. Or it's quite a bit ago. And, I mean, from my understanding is you guys were on the runway getting ready to take off. Everything's mm-hmm. fine. Mm-hmm. And you take off, but it's almost like a quick dip, mm-hmm. and you go into a forest or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, but before we do that, like, we have the rest of the runway to run out of, so we're going however many miles per hour, a couple hundred miles per hour. By the time that the pilot realized that he didn't want to take off, he kind of feel the front wheel take off, and then boom, smack back onto the ground. So when it did that, I looked around like, all right, that's new. Like, I've never kind of felt that before. And then just a few seconds into, like, realizing that there's no more runway that we have left in front of us, because I'm sitting on the wing and the window seat, and I'm kind of looking out, and I just see nothing but a forest about 50 yards ahead of us and a bunch of fences leading into the trees. So as we're hitting the fences, and they're just popping up one by one, just flying, boom, 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 because the tail of the plane or the head of the plane the nose of the plane is smacking through all the fences. I look up and I see this flight attendant, this older black lady just crying. I'm like, man, all right, well, you're supposed to be holding it down. If you're crying, what the hell are we supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
Like, this can't be good if the flight attendant is crying. So, sure enough, thankfully, there was a big old ditch right before, like, a huge set of trees. And I think they kind of put that there just in case something like this happens to slow the plane and kill all the momentum. And luckily, we got stuck in the ditch. By that point, kind of the whole cabin was full of smoke. You just hear a bunch of pops and bangs and sounds you never kind of heard before. And you just go in survival mode. You just try to find an emergency door exit. You try to run out as fast as you can. Our exit, because I was sitting in the middle of the plane, we had to jump onto the wing, and then from the wing, we had to jump onto the ground.
And how far is that? Like, from the wing to the ground?
Like, dude, like, you definitely had to brace your landing. And then we were flying with the cheerleading team because we were flying to the Big Ten tournament, so we were bringing families, cheerleaders, and all that with us. So they were literally, like, in formation, in baskets, catching each other off the wing because of how far the dip was. And because we're in a dip itself, so it's kind of like even elevated a little bit more off the ground. So it was a good, like, I'd say like 8-9 foot jump from the wing.
Yeah.
And then as soon as we land, it's crazy. You hear over the intercom, like, run, they blow up all the time. So we're thinking, once we're out of the plane, we're good. But they're like, nah, you got to get even further. So we ended up taking off in the middle of the forest. We reconvened as a team back at our practice facility like an hour or two later. And coach was like, kind of went over like, yo, we're playing tomorrow at noon, so we have to vote. We can either bus it right now to Washington, D.C. from Michigan and get there in the morning, or we can take the Pistons plane tomorrow and get there right before the game. We're like, we looked around like, I will walk before I get on the plane.
Yeah.
Like, sure enough, all the players voted to drive, and Coach Beilein was like, yeah, well, my say goes, and we're flying.
Oh, my God. He wanted to make you feel like you had some
When I tell you that next flight, that next morning, was the most nerve-wracking flight of my life. Like, it was insane.
I don't even like flying, and I've never dealt with anything other than light turbulence. So
my point, I didn't like flying up until that point either, and now it's kind of I had PTSD, but it's kind of gotten better with the amount of flying that I have to do.
Yeah,
so definitely the takeoffs are still a little rocky, but once I'm in the air, I'm kind of cool.
So. Wow. Yeah, that's just a wild experience that most people don't go through, or if they do, they don't come out as lucky as all of you did.
And ironically, we had a teammate at the time, at Austin Hatch. I don't know if you know his story.
No.
He was a 5-star recruit, and he was actually a class above me, and he had gotten a plane crash. He had gotten two, matter of fact. He had gotten one when he was younger. I think he was like 8 or 9. His immediate family died, besides his dad, who was flying the plane. And then he ended up being fine from that one, recovering within a few months, kept playing basketball, picked up an offer from Michigan, became one of the top players in the country in his class. And about, I think it was 12 days after he committed to Michigan, he got in another plane crash. And his dad was flying that one with his whole step family. And unfortunately, everybody passed on that one, in that crash, but him. So he had to, from that crash, he had to learn how to walk. It was a little bit more devastating than the first one in terms of just injuries. And so Beilein kept his scholarship and everything, and he always went on the trips with us. And he was kind of still learning how to play basketball, is functioning and everything, but he was still like super smart. He was fine, like imperatively and everything, but just in terms of basketball and getting his athleticism back, he was still trying to, you know, work on that. So he would travel with us, practice with us, but he wouldn't really play. But I say that to say, he went on every trip for like the prior 2 years, but that was the one trip that he didn't go on.
Wow.
It was the one we got in that little plane incident, and he used to sit by me on the plane too. So
wow.
it was just ironic.
Wild. We'll go on to some brighter subjects after that one.
Sure. On the brighter side, though, from that plane crash, we ended up winning the Big Ten tournament. We won 5 games in 5 days, so it was kind of a blessing in disguise.
The wildest week of your life, probably.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And then how was it winning those games, going into the tournament? Because, I mean, a lot of teams, they make it into the tournament, and then sometimes they're just one and done. And that's the fun part about the tournament, is that they are, you know, single-game elimination, so everything kind of, you know, not even kind of matters. Everything matters. But how fun is it after you win each one?
It was super fun. And I feel like for us, we had a super talented team. And we just hit a rough patch right before March. And so kind of that plane crash and everything kind of ironically brought us back to life. And we just started playing for one another, and we're like, bro, we almost just lost it all. So it's no reason for us not to go out here and give it all we got. And we did, and we just had, that was probably the most fun I've had playing basketball. That 2 week period from the Big Ten tournament and then rolling it over into the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
And going on a run that we went on, and unfortunately, you know, a missed shot, a game winner, kept us away from getting where we wanted to get to, but we made a run.
Yeah, and it was a good run. I mean, yeah. There's a lot of D1 schools, and
not for sure.
Only so many make it so far as you guys to go ahead and do that. Amazing as is, but now you look at the part that goes after college, which is the draft, and I'm really excited to talk to you about it because not all of our players get to have that experience, mm-hmm. or at least going as high as you did as well. What was your draft process like? I mean, what is the most informative way you can give it, not just the generic answers, but almost to, you know, someone like me, it's never been a part of the draft process. Yeah. And, you know, yourself at the time frame, I'm sure it all has to feel super surreal and, mm-hmm. you know, an amazing feeling as well. But how does it go? Like, just take me from the beginning of the draft process and choosing that you really want to jump in at that moment.
Yeah, my draft process was kind of unique because it was the first year you could test the waters. So I waited until the very end, like the last day before the deadline, on whether or not you had to go back to school or you were going to hire an agent and stay in the draft. And I just remember making that decision that last day with my close circle, my mom, my godfather, my AAU coach, my high school coach, and just getting insight and intel on what they thought. And it all kind of lined up with how I felt. And so I wanted to stay in the draft. It was just a matter of, you know, calling Coach Beilein, telling him my decision, and going from there. And he was reluctant, obviously. I remember I called him that morning, and that evening he was in California, and we were having dinner, and he and my assistant coach, Sadia, flew from Michigan, like, that day to try to persuade me and also try to see just exactly where I was, if they felt like I was making the right decision, just to see how confident I was. So we ended up having that talk. It went how it went. I stuck with my decision, and the rest is history. I hired an agent, and I just went full in with the entire draft process. Had a couple workouts. It was a unique process, and I didn't really have as many workouts as a lot of players because it's just how my agent set it up and whatnot. But mm-hmm. I wouldn't. Traded at all.
Who was your first workout? Which team did you work out for first?
The Lakers.
Lakers?
Yeah.
So how was that? I mean, you get a call from the Lakers. Are you trying not to get too excited, you know? Because, I mean,
Nah, for sure.
Hear about all these franchises, and, you know, no matter what in the NBA, you kind of have some places you want to go, even though you're willing to go anywhere. You're from California yourself. Mm-hmm. So you hear Lakers, and you get to go out to the facility, and you see it.
Man. I got to the facility, and it was just me, my agent, Magic Johnson, and Luke Walton, and Rob Pelinka. I'm like, oh, I just, for one, Luke Walton watching Kobe grow up, knowing of, and Bill Walton being from Cali, UCLA guy, like, Luke Walton is Luke Walton, and then just seeing Magic, that one right there, I was like, damn, this is surreal, like, I'm here now, and then Pelinka, obviously, he's a Michigan guy, so those ties. So it was a fun workout. It was a good experience, and it was a good one to have for it being my first one, too.
When you're going through that, obviously, in the draft, as a rookie, you don't get any kind of optional where you're to go. You know, I've heard players say, like, oh, you know, please don't draft me at X team or whatever. And that can happen in some occasions, but you can't really dictate where you're going to go. You know, you can be first round, second round, things like that. But do teams kind of roll out the red carpet for players, in a sense, like when they even go to visit on these workouts to try and make you feel like, hey, you want to be a part of this organization pretty bad? Or do you think that, was there any kind of anything special like that?
Nah, I think it really depends on the player. I think if you're one of those guys that are going top whatever, top three for sure, then it's like you might get a different approach from a team. But I think at the same time, teams are trying to interview you. And so you're not really trying to interview the team, so you want to play for them, and I feel like that's how it should come across more than anything, is that, no, I'm here because I want to work for you guys, I want to play for you guys, not the other way around. Like, you don't have to try to give me everything to try to make me feel more at home, because I'm going to make this my home regardless, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like that's how it should be. And I couldn't really tell you if that's how teams interact, because I don't think I was, and I know I wasn't one of those top.
Yeah, I mean, hey, so first round pick and in the teens is still extremely impressive. I mean,
appreciate it.
That's a really good resume. I mean, it's better than most people that ever pick up basketball in their life, and then even better than most people that ever go to college, and then more than most people that ever even go pro.
No, that's true.
So
I appreciate that.
It's really good to go, hey, man, no, you're the one with the skills. I just sit here and talk, man. So looking at that, you get selected by Milwaukee. Did you know you were going to go to Milwaukee?
No, I didn't really have an idea until it was one of the couple teams I worked out with right before the draft, like the day of the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of had an idea that I was somebody on their radar and they were strongly considering. But it wasn't really until about the ninth or tenth pick when I got that call and they kind of told me, yo, if I'm still on the board, that I'm their guy, this and that. So from about the tenth pick, when I was in that draft room with all my family and friends, I had stepped out with my agent, took the call, and I came back in the room and I tried to play poker face, nothing special happened on that phone call, because I didn't want to count my chickens before they hatched either.
Yeah, because I'm sure there's been people that have been told plenty of times, you're our guy, we're picking you. So, even if you have number one, I'm sure they tell you that, you know?
Definitely. So, it was a blessing, and, you know, I got drafted 17th to Milwaukee, and I flew out the next day, so.
To me, I always love watching the draft. I truly do. It's one of my favorite events of the year. What's it kind of like from your perspective? Because to me, it's like, you know, they fly a player to New York. They go ahead and do all the press and stuff. And it may be your most major press event at that point in your life,
you know.
It's you haven't done any kind of media day with your pro team yet. Yeah. And you're going in, you're picking out your suit. How does that all go about? What is it like? Do they send you to someone particular to go pick out your suit? Is that something your agent is setting you up with? Is that something that the league kind of has? Like, we have these people in New York that do all the suits.
So I did, I handled that process before, because my agency at the time, Wasserman, was out of L.A. So I did all my pre-draft stuff in L.A., and they set up all those meetings, all those appointments with stylists, people to come fit me for a suit and whatnot. It was my first suit, too, so I wanted to do a little something different. They asked me what color. I chose green, ironically.
Isn't it funny how that works a lot of time for a lot of players? Like, whatever color they choose, they end up going up there with that.
And then I decided at the time I would have been the first one. I know since, like, Trae Young, Draymond, they've done it, I think, at the ESPYs. But I was going to wear shorts, the suit shorts.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I had it and everything. And then the last minute, like 2 days before the draft, I just decided I didn't want to go to New York. I didn't want to go to the green room. I just wanted to stay home and watch it with my family and friends, because when you fly to New York and you're in the green room and you're at the table, you're only allowed to bring one or two people. So I wanted everybody that I lived this dream with up until this point, that invested so much into me and sacrificed so much for me, to share the moment with myself as well. So I just decided to stay home and
have
all those people that ever had anything to do with the reason why I'm here with me for that day and for that entire night before I have to, you know, take off to Milwaukee. So
that's so awesome.
That's the decision I made, and that's the sacrifice I made, and I loved and I enjoyed it, and I still look back at those memories, and I wouldn't choose anything
either way. That's totally amazing. You make great points. You can only bring X amount of people, and I mean, it shows what family really means to you and how that stuff matters more than anything. You know, what? No matter any other part of your life, whether that you're a pro basketball player, all these hours you put in the gym, that your family is the most important thing, and you realize that at a young age, which is really cool, and a lot of players wouldn't go ahead and normally do that because you want the New York experience.
For sure.
So you get drafted. Now I'm just trying to think if it's me in that scenario. Mm-hmm. Are you on Milwaukee Bucks social media right then and there, seeing what everybody's comments are about, oh, we got DJ Wilson, are you looking at anything? You're not.
I've never really been one of those. I don't know, I'm weird on social media. If you like, just check what I post or when I post, I kind of just post what I want and I get off. Like, I don't even really pay mind to anything else. I try not to, at least, either. So, I remember tweeting, my first tweet was like, what's up, Milwaukee? Something like that, right when I got drafted, and it's kind of the history from there.
So you get in on day one, you fly into Milwaukee. What do they do for you then? Because at that point, I feel like they kind of roll out a nice carpet for you. Now you're on the team, you know, you go in. And
carpet's a little redder.
Yeah. Sure. So you go in. You played in Michigan, so you knew the Midwest very well. Mm-hmm. And you already know the winters you got to prepare for. You know, originally from Chicago, so I went over to Milwaukee a bunch.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful facility they have over there. I mean, absolutely stunning. Mm-hmm. And you only played in the new one, right? You never played in BMO?
No, I played in BMO. That was my first year.
BMO is like my... You're laughing at it, but that's my favorite place. No, I wish BMO still existed. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I used to go up there, and it was, I guess, before Giannis got drafted, it was when they had Brandon Jennings, J.J. Redick mm-hmm. was there for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the games, they weren't really all that popular at the moment, mm-hmm. and understandably so, but gosh, there was something magical about that. And just how you could feed them with the fans, because both teams entered through the same tunnel. And that's a very unique situation. I haven't seen other NBA arena. So you guys entered through the same tunnel, and it seemed like every time I went there, all the players loved everything to do with the fans. I've never seen it at another arena as much as I used to see it at BMO's. Mm-hmm. Even on opposing teams, players just giving away their shoes, mm-hmm. doing whatever. And you can get extremely close there.
Yeah.
It's not like how Pfizer now is kind of built where there's a gap in, how the Kia Center is here.
No, the fans at BMO definitely seem like they were on the court. For sure.
No, I mean, gosh, just what a fun facility it was.
It was a fun atmosphere, too, for the year that we played in BMO. Yeah, it was definitely
unlike anything else.
For sure.
And
it just felt homey.
Yeah, it did. It felt very much like, hey, we're a small team, but we don't care. We're gonna rock it no matter what. And you guys had that great fan section every game, no matter if back before, you know, you're there in the height of Giannis.
Yeah.
But before that, even when nobody's even sitting in the upper bowl at all and they're kind of just pushing everybody down to the lower bowl, that fan section was there.
Yeah, that energy was going.
That was so cool.
We'd have wideouts and whatnot. Kind of reminded me of when, like, Russ and KD were the early years of OKC.
Yeah.
And how that fan base would just go crazy during those playoffs and those runs. So, yeah. Those small market teams and those fans, they get behind their players and their teams, and it feels like no other.
So in that moment, I mean, you have a very similar in the sense of your height, probably a little bit taller, I would think, and on the truth side of it, of Giannis.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go there, it has to be a player you're looking up to, right? Like when you're watching pros, because mm-hmm. you kind of model yourself. It's like, hey, this is my build. This is kind of mm-hmm. who I am,
mm-hmm.
you know? So how is that going to work with Giannis? And you're going in on day one. How accepting is he of all the new young players?
Super. Super acceptive. I remember like my first day in Milwaukee, I did my whole press, my interview, and then I went to the gym with my player coach. I was working out with him, and Giannis had came in, and I think he was just coming in to grab some things, and came right up to me, congratulated me, met me and all that, and was like, yo, just come by tomorrow at 9 and work out, this and that. And from then, it was just like our relationship just built from there. And he would take me under his wing. We'd work out. I would just watch his approach to each and everything, from what he ate to how he managed his time, to his sleep schedule, his nap schedule.
So he was your vet?
His weight. I had a bunch of vets. I'm not going to lie. Like, I was blessed to be able to, like, just soak up a bunch of knowledge and ask a lot of questions from a lot of people, from Jason Terry to me playing with Pau Gasol, to Bledsoe, Drew Holiday, Chris Middleton, Dellavedova,
I was there, Lopez on Martin there, Williams, DJ Augustine. I mean, you had a lot of great players come through that time frame. And at any points in your rookie year, what was like your most pinch me moment in your rookie year?
First practice.
That 9 a.m. with Giannis or the actual practice?
Actual practice. Even then, even that first practice with Giannis, we play one-on-one after and whatnot. But definitely that first organized practice, like training camp practice. People ask me my welcome to the NBA moment. That has to be it. Like, it's not even a game. It starts in practice. I remember we split up by position, and I'm with the forwards. So it's me, Jabari Parker, Giannis, and Chris Middleton.
Wow.
And a rookie has to start off on defense. And Coach Kidd at the time, Jason Kidd, he's so defensive-minded to where it's like, yo, you can't get off until you get a stop. And so I remember the first play, I'm starting at the nail, and it's one of those drills where the coach passes it to a player and you have to close out. So he passes it to Giannis, I go to close out, Giannis runs through the pass, and as I'm closing out, he runs right past me, he windmills it, boom. I'm like, yo, all right, well, I'm still on defense, so next guy up, Jabari. I'm thinking he might run through the pass. He jab steps like he's about to run through the pass. And he goes the other way. He throws it off the backboard. Boom. I'm like, what is going on? Now I got Chris. I'm not really, at this time, I'm not too familiar with Chris' game. I just know he's a bucket. I didn't realize how methodical. And he just moves at his own pace. A lot different than Giannis and Jabari. Like, his game isn't predicated off athleticism at all. So I go close out to him, and I'm so used to dudes running through the pass now with Jabari and Giannis. I, like, stumble over my toes because I don't know how to stop. And, like, he hits me with a whole, like, boom, boom, combo package, like, three dribble. I'm on my heels, off glass, boom. Long story short, like, I was on defense for for, like, that whole – when I tell you I probably got, like, 12 to 13 straight buckets on my head. Like, it was probably the most demoralizing feeling I had ever felt up until that point on the basketball court. Like, I went home calling my boys, calling my – I remember my mom, like, bro, this is going to be the longest career ever. Like, if this is what it is every day. But you just – the more you're in there, the more reps you get, the more you learn, like, the easier it kind of gets and the more it slows down. So, you know, I was honored to be able to share the court with those type of guys.
Did you call anybody from, like, your rookie draft class that you were friends with and was like, hey, what was your first day like? Did you ask somebody – like, did you – because, I mean, the gap
– Yeah, I remember calling Karis because – Karis LeVert, she had left the year before. And I kind of told him it was kind of like the same experience when I got to Michigan. Like, I realized, damn, this is college basketball. This is Big Ten basketball. Like, that first practice, having to play Karis one-on-one. So I kind of told him, like, new levels, new devils. It was kind of like the same feeling I had my freshman year at Michigan, my rookie year I had in Milwaukee. So I kind of compared those two.
And then you go ahead and see the gap, really, and it's a big gap in the speed, isn't it? Like, I mean, just going from, because I hear people all the time, like, especially when I was younger, you know, all my friends would say, oh, I could score on an NBA player. Yeah. I'm like, you could never score on an NBA player. I would tell them that all the time. This is before I even stepped foot inside a gym watching anybody. Just, I mean, when you guys were all messing around, you guys were hitting from half court, having fun like that.
Yeah.
And I used to have a buddy who would always say, oh, I could hit an NBA player. I'm like, never. You don't even understand. You could never. There's a reason why it's, you know, 4,000 people ever in all the years of the NBA have ever been able to. Yeah, I mean, gosh, not even, I mean, you know, Kia Center holds 18,000 people.
Right.
Only 4,000 people, like 500 have ever donned an NBA jersey.
Yeah.
And I'm confident that includes the people that have only played one game,
one game for
is
sure.
Insane, because you have 150-something games around there.
I saw some, a stat the other day, it was like not even 1,000 people alive today have played in the NBA.
Wow.
Something like that.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. So it makes sense, like, I mean, a lot of the earlier days, and those people may not be with us that helped carve the way of the sport. But you're talking about your NBA moment. You know, unfortunately, with what your career, I mean, you've dealt with it a lot since high school. It's been a lot of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
I know you were saying the other day, and I'd already researched it too. Is, you know, you broke part of your spine in high school, right? And then, and then it's just been little ticky-tacky injuries a lot from there, and just trying to get your feet wet. How do you deal with that and trying to overcome those moments? Because you have to be mentally strong. Like, you truly do. It has to kind of feel similar to when you say, like, you know, it's demoralizing going up against Giannis. Mm-hmm. Because at points, I mean, you go out there and watch you, DJ. You're drafted at 17 for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
You have a great college career. You're in the NBA for 7 years on rosters consistently. And, I mean, you've seen it firsthand.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't get 7 years. A lot don't.
Not
that is
sure.
quite a long time. And then some parts on you, it has to be like, frustrating because it's your body, not you. Because when you go out there now, I mean, we traded for you a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was a year ago this time. I remember we traded. Everybody was really excited.
Yeah.
And like a day later, you broke your hand.
Take that,
And it's just, you know, at the beginning of this season, you're kind of dealing with that. But now, you're in and you're zoned in.
No,
and
definitely.
It's like, you have no business being on the floor with like a lot, like, and that's not the same thing against the G because it's extremely talented. I mean, there's people that are like you that are here. There's people that are all fighting their way back and whatnot, and
Definitely.
And people that are fighting for their first chance. But I mean, gosh, you're just on a tear lately.
Nah, I appreciate
and
that.
It's amazing. How do you deal with those little things, like with the injuries, kind of just going in and holding you back a little bit?
I feel like I learned a lot in high school dealing with those first two back fractures and the time I had to miss and the opportunities I missed out on and the time I had to make up for and just like the mental resilience it kind of just created initially, I feel like that kind of just laid the foundation of the perseverance mindset and the, man, I'm going to put in the work and it's going to pay off regardless whether I'm out right now due to a tic-tac injury or not. But to piggyback off your point, like, it definitely is demoralizing in a sense and frustrating initially, mm-hmm. when, you know, little tic-tac injuries do happen, or freak injuries like I had in the beginning of this year with my shoulder do happen, because I know the amount of work and I know how hard I work.
Yeah.
To get me to this point, to be able to lace up or to be healthy once again. So for stuff to come around at, it feels like, the most inopportune times is definitely frustrating. But in hindsight, like, there's nothing else I'd rather be doing in this world, and I get the most joy, and nothing else fulfills like just what I have going on and how I feel other than basketball. So it doesn't really seem like work with me, other than just like the tedious rehab and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I know sooner rather than later, like, my luck is gonna turn around.
Oh,
and
yeah. I mean,
my health and everything, knock on wood, stays where it's at, and I just continue to have like a great, healthy career, because I feel like sky's the limit once it does turn around, and I feel like it is now. So,
oh yeah,
whatever team takes that chance, whoever takes that chance, is gonna get the player in which they feel like I could have been, or I have been along this entire time. It's just a matter of staying healthy. So,
yeah. I mean, you have a lot of experience, and some of that's even in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. What was the playoffs like? Is that a completely different beast?
Yeah.
Than playing in the regular NBA season?
Yeah, I feel like in Milwaukee, there's a lot of tough playoff battles. I mean, us between Boston. I think the one that sticks out to me the most is the one against Toronto when Kawhi was there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They ended up winning the championship that year, because we were up 2-0, and we ended up losing 4 straight. And I thought we had every chance, especially after winning the first two, that we were going to the finals. We were going to play Golden State.
Yeah.
We were going to play the Warriors, and then we had matched up well with them throughout the regular season. And then come to find out in the finals, you don't want anybody to get hurt. But then when KD and Klay both get hurt, it's like, damn.
You had your chance right there.
We could have walked there. Like,
yeah, and I'm sure even Giannis and, you know, I mean, the Bucks
and up. And now I'm feeling like that. So I can only imagine, like, the Giannis and the main contributors, yeah, like Chris and Bledsoe, how they felt. And, I mean, sure enough, they ended up getting one a few years later. But
yeah,
for myself, just watching the 7-game series and how hard it is, it's hard to win an NBA game in the regular season, let alone trying to beat a team 4 times out of 7. So,
well, you see it here with the G League. We do a lot of back-to-backs.
Yeah.
And that's where you really find out how good teams are.
For sure. That second game.
Yeah. And you see it. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, what we saw the other night when we went ahead and played Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake, yeah.
You know, you go in, mm-hmm. and the first game, it's a little bit rough.
Mm-hmm.
Second game, you guys look like a completely different team.
Nah, yeah.
And that's no knock against Salt Lake.
It's just a matter of adjustments,
yeah.
I feel like. It's a matter of executing the game plan. I feel like those are the two main, like, contributors into how to beat a team multiple times. Adjustments more than anything. So.
And then you go into Milwaukee, you have your final year with them. And that's their championship year, right? Your
mm-hmm.
final year.
Mm-hmm.
And you play a good chunk of the year with them.
Mm-hmm.
Do they give you a ring in the end?
Nah, they didn't give me a ring.
Wow.
Because you had to be on the playoff roster.
Okay.
But I do have a little accolade, though, regardless of the
fact. You're an NBA champion by technicality?
NBA champion. I feel like, because I was there for enough games and I played in enough.
That's what I was supposed to say, because you played till about March with them, right?
Yeah, I got traded, like, at the deadline, like, right before the deadline for P.J. Tucker. And then he ended up going over there, guarding all their best players, guarding KD,
yeah,
in the playoffs and whatnot, and they ended up winning that ring. And I remember I was in, because I was in Houston, so
all right.
we had an earlier vacation than they did.
Yeah.
So I remember I was in Cabo watching them play the Suns and watching them win the ring. And it was bittersweet, but I was just so happy for all my guys.
They're all your friends at
the
same time.
All my brothers, and a lot of the guys that were on that team were my vets when I first got there, to see just the work that they put in, and for it all to come to fruition in full circle. Like, I couldn't be more happy for them.
So you do that, you go to Houston, and how different is it? Because then you're in a different world.
Yeah.
You know, it's from being like, and nothing against other teams, but that's kind of what they're doing with you. They're like, oh, we want this young player.
Yeah.
Because they're a young team that wants to build up themselves, so that's what they're looking at you for. And Milwaukee's at that point of like, we're in win now.
Yeah.
We want vets around. Yeah. And that's just, you know, sometimes it's how it goes in the league.
Not for sure.
A lot of it is just landing where is the best spot for you at that moment. Mm-hmm. And you go over to Houston now, and like you said, you have an early vacation. And how is it doing that transition and just going there? And then the Raptors have a lot of interest in you from time on, then going.
I think luckily, so I got traded with DJ Augustine.
Oh, yeah, so DJ did get traded.
Yeah, and he's from out there. So he was just somebody I could lean on, ask for advice. And it was my first trade. It was one of many for him. And he had been through that process before. So I remember us getting the news at the same time, us flying on the PJ to Houston the day after, the next day. So just asking him just about this process, what to expect. And then more ironically, what I always tell people is the last 2 years I was in Milwaukee, we had barely lost 20-something games.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get traded to Houston, and they're like in the midst of a 21-game losing streak.
Yeah.
I'm scratching my head like,
How does that happen?
And then I'm like, I think my second game, we play Milwaukee.
So
I'm like, bro, what is going on? Like, how is this going to turn out? And then, sure enough, I ended up playing real well. I think I had like 15-15, and we ended up beating them. So, ironically, we beat them. KPJ, Kevin Porter had 50.
Wow.
It was a good game. That was one of my favorite moments in the league for sure.
I hear a lot of people say, you know, when you're young, because mainly, I remember the Orlando Magic were really good. That was my team I was always a fan of. And, like, they had Jameer Nelson, Dwight Howard.
Yeah.
And Jameer always says someone had told him, I forgot which player it was, when they were going to the finals, he had told him, enjoy this while you have it.
Yeah.
Because you may never go to the finals again. And your team may never even go to the playoffs again. For all you know, you've had a lot. And he was so young, and they had so much success. And he was thinking, what are you talking about? All I've ever done is gone to the playoffs for all my career. And it's kind of similar to you, where you're thinking, how do you lose 20 games in a row when I've only lost 20 games?
No, for sure. But then you go and you kind of see, and no knock on anybody, I feel like at that point Houston was kind of going through a transition.
Yeah,
trying to just culture wise.
Well, nobody can be great 100% of the time.
Yeah, so you kind of just see like the 9-day difference between cultures, between just like the approach to the game and approach to work each and every day from a team that has championship expectations and aspirations compared to a team that's kind of just, you know, trying to get by. So
So you had a lot of interest in with the Raptors, or maybe the Raptors had a lot of interest with you, like throughout two seasons, wasn't it? They were kind of giving you some 10 days and then signing you on there. How was that going to play in a different country? I know it's just Canada, and I've been to Toronto many times. I absolutely love the city. I love the country of Canada. And it's very much like the States, but were you nervous at all going and thinking I'm going to live in a different country now and go play in another country a bit?
Man, hell no. I was excited, especially because in Milwaukee, a lot of my best games of my career had been in Toronto. So I was just – I love the atmosphere in terms of, like, just how – the fans brought it each and every night, how diverse the whole city was. The fact that you're playing for literally a country, like you're the only pro basketball team, you know what I mean? And so you just have a whole country behind you. And then not to mention just like the team themselves, the nurse himself, like I was just a fan of everybody. And I enjoyed my time. And sure enough, like with my luck, I had an unfortunate injury right before you know, things were really getting serious from those 10 days. So it kind of just set me back and kind of brought me to where I am now. But I don't regret any moments or times in Toronto. I had a blast and I enjoyed it.
That's awesome to hear. Are you a bit of a collector of any of your stuff? Like, do you have your first Milwaukee Bucks jersey still?
Yeah,
do
I got all of that stuff. My mom and my grandma are huge, like, hoarders, especially my grandma.
Do you keep all of, like, your game jerseys? Because I think if it were me, I would keep every one of them, even though...
I have to, especially just because growing up, you, like, that's the ultimate goal,
Is
to have those NBA threads. So
you get so many a season when you're on a team regularly, right? Like with the Bucks, like you get a lot. Like,
Do you literally have all of them?
No,
I can't say I have all of them, because I know I've given some to, like, friends and whatnot. I've given some away to, like, fans, but I have a good number.
Yeah.
I have a couple uniforms of, like, each... Like each jersey, each uniform,
yeah,
each like alternate home away, so So yeah.
And then what about your shoes? Because I mean, I just imagine, you know, being a first round pick, you're gonna have a lot of shoes from whatever your shoe deal is.
No, I do have a lot of shoes, especially just and yeah, basketball shoes in general. But I think my favorite pair was so Kobe retired in 16.
Mm-hmm.
I was class of 17. He gave each 21st or 20 draft picks, like the Kobe 5, and he autographed them.
Wow.
Like, icy white, cold pair with a black signature, Kobe Bryant. I got those. Still to this day, don't tell anybody where they're
at. Yeah,
my mom and my grandma know exactly where those pairs of shoes are, and I will never touch them. Like, that's probably one of my most prized possessions in my life is those autographed Kobes.
That's awesome to have. I mean, that's something really cool. It shows, you know, the character of the person and who he was and what he was doing for all those draft picks coming in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what a cool piece of history to have right there.
For sure.
And, at what point do you get rid of the shoes, and how often are you wearing new shoes in a game?
For me, I love shoes, especially basketball shoes. Kobe's too. I'm a big Kobe head. So it really depends. I like to switch my shoes up. I don't like to wear the same shoes over and over again just because I had to do that my entire life growing up.
Yeah, of course.
So like the moment I had the chance of being able to switch shoes and wear what I wanted, I took full advantage, and I still to this day kind of like to switch my shoes up every day, every couple practices, every game. I never really get rid of them. I kind of just always keep them because I'm gonna come back to them eventually.
I can't even imagine how many pairs of shoes you own, DJ. That is, I get like one or two a year.
One or two sets a year,
and that's what I go. My wife has a lot of shoes, but not me. I don't have as much. But we talked about, you know, all of those items, and then you get to the G League. You have had a phenomenal year with us so far. Mm-hmm. How are you kind of just enjoying the warm weather when you've been a cold weather person? You grew up in California. You were more like in the central part of California though, right?
No, I was in northern.
Northern?
Yeah, not central.
Okay.
There's nothing out in central.
When I think central, I think like Sacramento.
Fresno? Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Okay. So I spent a lot of high school out there. I grew up in the Bay. But Northern California, even like Mount Shasta, where I was born, it gets a lot of sun. It snows up there too.
Yeah,
they get all four seasons. Like, California is a crazy place.
It really is.
You can drive 1 hour this way and it never snows, and you drive 1 hour this way and all it does is snow.
Yeah, you can go surfing, go skiing in the same day.
It's the only place. Sure. So I think I'm enjoying my time here. I think being out in Florida and being out in the sun kind of does remind me of home. So being able to just wake up every day and see the sun outside is I'm appreciative because I feel like I kind of took advantage of it growing up, and then living in the Midwest for the last about 9-10 years.
Yeah,
you kind of forget what the sun looks like come February.
Oh yeah, so, you know how it is. It's free game to snow anytime from October through April.
Think
it's gone, and it's funny because people like that are from the West Coast, like yourself or me, now being in Florida for X amount of years. You remember in the Midwest, that first 50-degree day you get after winter?
Nah, for sure.
Windows down and you are cruising with your music going at 50 degrees.
It helps. It helps mentally. It helps, like, just mental clarity. Just, you can have a bad day. You can have a bad day at work here at the gym. Just go outside and you're able to see the sun.
Oh, yeah.
You're able to wear some shorts. Like, it's just a different feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of just brings you back to life. So, I'm appreciative. Yeah, definitely. And I've enjoyed my time here.
We've had a phenomenal season so far, DJ. I know there's aspirations for you to go to the NBA, obviously. That's the goal of the G League for everybody, is they all want to make it into the league again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their resurgence at that point. But can you talk about just this team in general? I mean, I know G League teams are only together for a year, typically.
Almost
everybody clean house afterwards because you're getting new E10s with other teams, whether it's two ways, the other teams, or if you're signing on with another NBA team, or some players go overseas. What can you say about this G League team in comparison to the other ones you've played with?
I feel like with the talent we have, you wouldn't expect that many guys with how talented each and every individual is to be as bought in as we are.
Yeah.
I feel like we're kind of reaping those benefits and the benefits of the sacrifices we're each having to make within this win streak, within the last kind of month of the year. I feel like it's kind of all coming together. We've had some ups and downs, especially just adapting to a new roster, losing B-Dub, having our two ways, TQ, Kevon, kind of up and down, me being out for the first part of this year. So I feel like now we're kind of learning not even learning, we're kind of just growing into our own, and we're becoming our own, and we're always going to play hard, and that's something that, you know, coaches always emphasize, that they never have to question is how hard we're going to play. It's just a matter of, like, how together we're going to play, and I feel like that's coming together day in and day out, practice by practice, and I feel like you can see it game by game, just the improvements we're making, and I feel like it's a perfect time to make that jump, because playoffs are right around the corner, and now is the time you want to start playing your best basketball. So I'm confident in each and every one of us, and I feel like we've put ourselves in a position, and we're continuing to put ourselves in a position individually for us not to be in the same position this year that we can be next year. So that's the ultimate goal. And
I mean, it shows you, it's a weird G League team. It truly is, of like, no knock to what any future teams we're going to have. And just in my time in the G, I don't think we're ever going to be this blessed with this much talent.
And I feel like we know that again. From an individual standpoint and a player standpoint, we know that. So we want to make the most of it. And I feel like there's been times where we've pressed because we know how good we can be instead of kind of letting it come to us. And I feel like we've kind of found that balance, and we're tiptoeing that line. So
a lot of NBA players on this G League team, and not just saying passing NBA players. I'm saying NBA caliber players currently
on the bench too. And guys are just getting better throughout the year. You see the growth that guys are making from 1 through 15. So it's scary, and it's a good problem to have. I would hate to coach, because the minutes and whatnot could be so frustrating, because everybody deserves to play, but it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, rather be in this problem than a lot of other problems.
For sure.
But DJ, we're not going to take up any more of your time. Thank you so much for spending all this time with us. I mean, I've truly had a great time. It's been awesome getting to talk to you on this kind of level, and
I appreciate
and find out some more of that, and hearing about how you have your collection of shoes, collection of jerseys, and knowing that you spent your time with your family at draft night. That's really cool.
No, I appreciate it. And I appreciate y'all having me, being able to just come out here, talk to you guys, shop it up like nothing. I forgot we were even doing this.
Yeah.
I just felt like we were at the crib. So, I appreciate it, definitely.
DJ.
Thank you.
Thank you, really. That was a lot of fun, yes, DJ.